thank you very much for your endurance. Thank you. It is my pleasure to introduce the second panel. The first, we resolved all the domestic issues in Egypt. And now in this panel, we're going to try to resolve all the foreign policy issues in Egypt. We have a collection of, I think, old friends and new friends who I'd like to introduce to you. At the far end, Amr Hamzawi, who is well known in Washington because of the excellent work he did at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. I think all of us who go from Washington to Egypt are then struck at the role that Amr has now played in politics in Egypt. I think you're my only friend who's ever been on a billboard, and I think that is likely to be the same. He was a parliamentarian in the previous People's Assembly. He is, as all my panelists that in this panel is on television, but is a commentator and analyst and a deep thinker, representing, I think, an articulate viewpoint of the liberal view in Egypt. Dr. Ahmed Darag is the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee of the Freedom and Justice Party, trained as a civil engineer in the United States, a thoughtful and frequent participant in global debates, and I think a very articulate representation of the view of the ruling party in Egypt. And then on this end, General Samih Saif al-Yazal, a veteran of military intelligence in Egypt, the head of the Gumhuriya Center, a think tank which he founded after the revolution, remains close to many people with whom he used to serve in the military. And I think what we have here is a very nice balance of the different views of people who are working among themselves to arrive at the question of what the new Egypt's position in the new Middle East is. And so I'd like to start just by asking that question. What is the position of the new Egypt in the new Middle East? What is the role of the new Egypt in the new Middle East? And why don't we start with the general?
Sure, thank you very much, John, and good afternoon, everybody. Glad to be with you here today. This is my second public panel. Actually, I don't know why they put me with public panels, but anyway, God bless us today. Anyway, yes, it is a big issue now after the revolution, especially after July 1st, when we start to have a new administration coming from the Muslim Brotherhood. Definitely, the foreign policy of Egypt has been changed. I can give one example on that, which I somehow disagree with this policy, which is Iran. I think what we're doing with Iran now is not very well in the favor of Egypt and Egyptians. I can say that running behind Iran in that way, throwing us in their lap in that way, as well as getting all risks with the other Arab friends and brothers in the Gulf, which they are really annoyed about what we're doing with Iran, is not in our favor. Maybe someone will say, Emirates, the Iranian, they are occupying three islands, Tanab al-Kubra, Tanab so greater Tanab, so smaller Tanab, and Abu Musa, and still they have and maintaining a good relation with Iran, not good relation, at least a diplomatic relation. My answer to that is different. I mean, when you cannot compare that with Egypt, because, for instance, we are upsetting the Emirates very much, of course, because of this policy with Iran. We don't. The Emiratis, they don't need the Egyptian investors to go there, but we need Emirati investors. We need the green light from the government of United Arab Emirates to their investors to come invest in Egypt, which we are in bad need for that. The meantime, we are upsetting Saudi Arabia, we are upsetting Bahrain, we are upsetting Kuwait. So you have to actually, just like a chess, before you move your piece, you have to see the reaction, what you're going to expect from the other side. I believe we did not put that in mind. Why I'm afraid of Iran? Why I'm against this policy? Three things. I'm just giving an example for wrong policies, wrong foreign policies with Egypt now, an existing administration. Three things. Number one, I'm really afraid of exporting the Khomeini-Iranian theory and ideas to Egypt. Tasdir al-Thawra al-Irani. This is scaring. I don't like to see my country, another Iran. Number two, spreading the Shia theory and practice in Egypt. Egypt, I am a Muslim, moderate, very moderate, Sunni. And we want our country to be as Sunni as before. Okay, the yellow one. Very quick. So I'm against very much the Shiite idea and the Shiite theory to come to our country. Thirdly, which is the last one, because John is raising the other card now, is helping and paying by gives a lot of finance and finance power to some Egyptian groups in Egypt, politics or religious. I'm against this very much. I'm against, at the same time, the new law which is allowing the NGOs to receive foreign money without giving any indication. I mean, if you tell me I'm going to give you invoices, thank you very much. I can give you thousands of invoices tomorrow. But this money coming abroad for the NGOs, especially the religious one, I am against it 100%. Anyway, I will stop on that because John is there.
Thank you. Dr. Omar.
Okay. Thank you, John. Just out of my 3 minutes, I just wish that during the previous session, any one of our party was presented, because I believe the discussion would have been more rich if one of representing the Freedom and Justice Party was there, and actually a professional politician. Maybe Amr Hamzawi also shares this opinion with me. I mean, people were talking about parties and without any person belonging to any party, anybody except, of course, Mr. Naguib, but he's now not chairing the party, as I understand. So, you are? Okay, good. Good. This is the first time that I ever saw him, you know. Okay. But I'm proud of seeing him, actually. Now my 3 minutes starts. Everybody who loves Egypt was not very happy about how the status of Egypt on the international arena deteriorated over the last at least maybe 20 years. Egypt is a very big country, is a very civilized country, has always been effective universally. But if you follow up what Egypt has been doing on the foreign relations over the last 20 years, you actually get very sad. You know how the status became that low. So our strategy in the Freedom and Justice Party towards mending the situation, and I hope that this is eventually shared by all political forces in the country, because this is something I believe that we can achieve a very good agreement on outside of the discussions and fights over domestic politics and elections and things like that. This is something that we can seriously discuss and reach a good agreement on. For Egypt, for the new Egypt, we are hoping to have balanced relationship with everyone, with all countries, east, west, north, south, not in any particular direction. And the relationships should be based on mutual interests, should be based on mutual respect, rather than, you know, dictating any kind of policies or things to do. Definitely, there is a very good connection between internal affairs and external affairs. Egypt can never have a very strong role internationally unless it is strong and powerful internally, and this is, we realize this very well. And I hope we all of us in Egypt work together in order to develop Egypt to the extent that we are strong internally so that we are effective externally. But on the other hand, a very active foreign relations help very much to enhance the situation domestically, and This is something, this is a very important role for foreign policy that needs to be played. When we talk about balanced relationship with everybody, it is, I'm a bit surprised that my friend General Sameh started by criticizing. I mean, he didn't give me any break, he just started to criticize.
I had only 3 minutes, so I have to do the criticizing very quickly.
Yes, but actually I do not really absorb that. Where is this running into the Iranians? I mean, when we talk about balanced relationship with everybody, I mean, we still do not have diplomatic relationships with Iran. As a matter of fact, in order we realize very well that in order to be effective on the international arena, you have to have ties with everybody in order to be able to exercise influence. If we want to make any progress on the Syrian front, for example, how can we do that without having a minimum amount of talk with the Iranians? The same way, if we want to have peace and stability and calmness in Gaza, how can we do that without talking to people in Hamas? It is very important in order to be an effective player on the international arena to keep your ties connected with everybody in the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe the dynamics on this panel are going to give you a sense of how squeezed liberals are between the military establishment on the one hand and the Muslim Brotherhood on the other hand. So in a way, John is simply following the very logical order.
I'm the American mediator who's going to solve this next hour.
No. I mean, do not say an American mediator, because American mediator used to be a mediator and is no longer a mediator because is getting extremely biased. But that is a different question. So I would say John Alterman is a mediator in his capacity as John Alterman, and I respect that, but not as an American mediator. Now, let me turn into what I would like to highlight with regard to foreign as well as regional issues. Number one, I believe in the current environment, and looking at the different domestic challenges Egypt is facing, constitutional, political, social, and economic, our number one foreign and regional policy priority has to be to improve economic and trade relations in the region and beyond the region. And that number one foreign policy priority to improve economic and trade relations should take Egyptian diplomacy in new directions. I am not in principle against reaching out to Iran. It should make Egypt focus on economic and trade components when it reaches out to the Gulf region or elsewhere. And it should mean as well that Egypt has to evaluate economic and trade relations based on our interests, on our national interests. And let me inject in that picture a remark of caution, because I'm increasingly worried about the fact that Egypt is borrowing way too much money from Qatar. If you look at the foreign debt of Egypt, I'm going to refer to numbers so that we can get more of an objective discussion of what's going on. The current foreign debt of Egypt is close to $35 billion. If you look at the existing structure of the foreign debt, of the $35 billion US dollar, 20%, around 20% of it is owned by Qatar, and that is too dangerous. It is a structural dependency in the making, which we have to watch out for. It should not be simply left to ideological contestation or to sloganeering or to bashing Qatar or not bashing Qatar. I'm not interested in that stuff. I'm interested in avoiding that Egypt grows dependent in the sense of having 20%, close to 20% of its foreign debt owned by one country, and that one country pushes indirectly for changes not to be introduced to our taxation system in a way which gives that country free ride to acquire and to do acquisitions without paying taxes to the public treasury. That is a dangerous dependency which we have to watch out for, number one. Secondly, on economic and trade issues, and once again, I was shocked, in fact, to give you a sense once again how we position ourselves as liberals really in between. I was as critical I am of the president and his cabinet going to Qatar and borrowing and getting more money, be it with interest rates, by the way, and as critical as I have been with regard to the president and his cabinet's behavior with regard to lending and borrowing money, I am as critical of the discussion with regard to Iran coming from everywhere else in Egypt. Iran should not be reduced in terms of our need to reach out to Iran into extremist positions based on doctrine-related matters. I mean, how comes that Egypt with 90 million Egyptians with such a great history of being the center of Sunni Islam, how comes that Egypt of 90 million Egyptians becomes afraid of a tiny number of Iranian tourists coming to Egypt in an annual basis? That is a discussion which you will hardly find anywhere else, and it's an extremist discussion, and I feel bad whenever a liberal voice joins in taking the position of radical Salafis, saying no to Iranian tourists. That is not the way to conduct yourself in the region, and that is not the way to conduct yourself in foreign and regional policy. Do I have one more minute? 1 second? 10 seconds? 20, so, okay, the biased American mediator? Give me 40 seconds,
you
I would like.
To bargain.
Give me 40 seconds, I would like you.
Well, Americans will do anything to
now
be liked.
Fine. So now, third remark on Syria, and I'm sticking to regional issues as Jean asked us to do. On Syria and Iran, I believe, and I was supportive of the president articulating a position in defense of the Syrian quest for democracy and for human rights. However, I did not understand reaching out to Iran without discussing the Syrian issue with the Iranians as well, since the Iranian government is the number one government supporting the dictatorship in Syria. So if you are reaching out to Iran for different social and economic issues and for geostrategic issues, fine. Balance your relationship with the Arab Gulf, which is important. But if you are reaching out to Iran and you know well enough that Iran is the number one promoter of the dictatorship in Syria, so that needs to be a conditionality which we put forward before opening up or warming up to bilateral relations with the Iranians. So what I'm missing here is a clear and a well-defined line sticking to human rights, sticking to freedoms, sticking to promoting freedom and human rights, and those are at the core of the Egyptian revolution. And I would have expected the first elected president to do so. So number one, to be aware of national independence and not borrowing too much from Qatar. Secondly, to be accurate and well-spoken and upfront with regard to human rights and Syria, and not simply reaching out to Iran. And finally, for everyone else to avoid falling into the extremist trap of bashing the president for going to Iran based on doctrine-related matters which are in nature extremists and should not be promoted in Egypt.
Let me ask an intra-Arab question. And that is, it feels to me like Egypt is the source of a growing division, even within the Gulf Cooperation Council, where Saudi Arabia and the Emirates are very critical of the current government of Egypt, and Qatar is extremely supportive of the current government of Egypt. Is that a problem for Egypt that it doesn't have broad Gulf support? And if it is a problem, what should Egypt do to try to encourage broader Gulf Arab support?
Okay, I'll start.
I'm nodding.
Politics is acting more than talking, so you have to act. It meaning that if you'd like to get a normal relation with Saudi Arabia and Emirates and Kuwait and others, you have to act politically in a way that you attract them back to your track, you attract them back to be a good relation with you and normal relation with you, not to having them in the other side. The existing Egyptian foreign policy is actually eliminating them. They are putting them aside. They are not encouraging them to come back to your arena and help you, not only politically but also economically, by many actions. I mean, and when Egypt, I'll give you one example, another example, very straightforward. Mali. Mali, of course, the Al-Qaeda group were actually doing their best over there and fighting against the regime and trying to get control of the country. What we did in Egypt, that we actually said, oh, France is doing a bad job over there. Why France is invading Mali? We don't like that, and we are with the regime. Fine, this is in general, that's okay. But look at that. It's not because they are Muslims over there who are fighting, but they are from Al-Qaeda. You are upsetting Saudi Arabia by that. You are upsetting Emirates. You are upsetting other countries. That's not the way. You have to think twice before getting a decision. I have learned here in one of the strategic institutes in this city, in Washington, D.C., saying that you have to get to take the right decision at the right time. Sometimes, if you take a wrong decision at the right time, That sometimes it's okay, but you don't take a wrong decision at the wrong time. So that's not correct. The point is sometimes we're taking wrong decisions in the wrong time. And that affects us, affects the country. It doesn't affect only your foreign policy, it affects your economic policy, or affect everything. Therefore, my idea is, again, my friend Amr, I think Amr should sit here, and we have John as a border between the other side, but Amr sat there wrongly, but I wanted to come next to me. But Amr over there. Amr Hamzawi. But anyway, but Amr Drag is my friend as well, by the way. And we respect each other very well. No, just a joke. But the point is, you see, it's a joke. Everybody laughs. Anyway. Anyway, back to the point. Amr Hamzawi said, and it may be this first time to disagree with me, that we shouldn't be actually afraid from Iran and Iran tourists. What's Iran tourists? Again, it's not only Iran tourists. My point of view, you are taking the decision now to get a normal relation with Iran, where Iran is threatening Israel, threatening the Americans' bases in the Gulf, threatening American bases in the south of Europe by nuclear bombs. And they're gonna, by the way, before end of September, Iran will have the first. I'm telling you information now. I'm really, really responsible about that. The first atomic bomb, militarily. All right? The first one. They will produce the first one by end of September. I'm sure about that. So now we're talking about a nuclear power coming and threatening everybody. Why now you want to have a normal relation with them? I don't mind to have a relation with them, but not very tight relation. Not the way we are doing it. Not because they are waving with 2 million tourists, I'm going to give you some money. I don't want this money. If they're going to come and export the revolution to me and spread Shia theory and idea in my country, I don't want that. I don't want that money. Believe me. I can have a normal relation with them. That's fine with me. But not in that way. Not in a speedy way. Step by step. Sorry.
I was hoping to keep it more on the intra-Arab side. And on the intra-Arab side, is it a problem that there's not broad GCC support for Egypt? Should it be an or should I say differently, should it be an objective of the government of Egypt to have broad GCC support, and what would be required to broaden that support?
Definitely, it is our interest. We're not happy that we don't have a good, normal and good relationship with the countries like the Emirates or Kuwait or even sometimes Saudi Arabia. This is not something that any Egyptian likes. But let me remind you that the first country that President Morsi visited after he became president was Saudi Arabia. Actually, he was criticized for that as well. I know that, ironically. And also he visited it one more time. And I know, personally, I know that there are a lot of attempts to have, whether with Saudi Arabia or the Emirates, to try to regain the good relationship between these countries and others. But the notion that Qatar is something else and is trying to control Egypt and stuff like that, this is really, I'm not sure how is this impression is reaching people. For example, the financial support that Qatar started to provide for Egypt started during the time of the military council, not during the time of the President Morsi. As a matter of fact, the $3 billion they talked about didn't even reach Egypt yet. And that, right? I mean, during the time of the Military Council, Qatar started and promised, made that promise at that time, that it is going to pour $10 billion to the Egyptian economy, to the central bank, in order to support the Egyptian revolution. And that was before even the Freedom and Justice Party was established at all. No, before the elections, before anything. So the idea of tying this to the Muslim Brothers or the Freedom and Justice Party, I see baseless, actually. And on the other hand, although it seems that there are big differences between what Qatar is doing and what Saudi Arabia is doing and the Emirates is doing, but in reality, there is a very good degree of consensus between all the GCC countries. They have strategic objectives, and there are limits that no one can exceed. It's not like they are becoming enemies or anything like that. But as I said, we hope that we retain and we regain good relationships with the Emirates and Saudi Arabia the way they have always been. The same thing applies to Iran. I mean, where is this intimacy that people are feeling between Egypt and Iran right now? All what is happening is that they're starting to be some admittance for some tourists to go to some places in Egypt, which are beach places here and there, not even to Cairo. They are not even allowed to go to Cairo. Where are these intimate relations? I'm sure that there are more Iranian tourists going to the Emirates than they are going to Egypt. And is this all? I mean, people are talking about, when we talk about that, I agree with Amr, of course, but this is what we are really doing. When we talk with the Iranians, we tie any development in our relationship with Iran with progress in the way they are dealing with the Syrian crisis. So this is absolutely, I mean, our position towards Syria is very clear. This is not on the account of our relationship with Syria or anybody else. When you talk about Mali, we are not supporting the current regime. As a matter of fact, Al-Qaeda is not the current regime. I don't know if you know this. The current regime is not, the Al-Qaeda is rebels against the current regime. So we never said that we are supporting the current, or we are supporting Al-Qaeda or anything like that. All what we said, all the president, what he said was that we do not support international intervention. We would like conflicts to be solved peacefully. This is all. Nobody said anything about supporting Al-Qaeda or supporting, and this is what is worrying Saudi Arabia. I don't know where is this coming from. I believe that there are a lot of exaggerations about these aspects, and we need to take this a little bit easy. We need to forget about domestic politics for a while and start talking seriously about what is the best interest of Egypt, okay, for when it comes to its foreign policy. There is a big area that we can agree upon in when it comes to this item.
Okay. Well, that is exactly the major point, I believe, which I feel is missing, and it's missing the national consensus with regard to foreign policy preferences, foreign policy priorities is missing, to my mind, because the government is yet to articulate a clear vision on its foreign policy priorities with regard to the Middle East, with regard to the Arab world, as well as with regard to the different international ties which Egypt has sustained for a long time. Now, of course, there were expectations right after the revolution that once you have a regime change, the new regime, as it has been the case in many places, reconsiders foreign policy preferences, reconsiders foreign policy alliances, and redefines some of them. In order to do so regionally or internationally, you have to have a vision. And what we are missing is a clear vision. Even a vision in progress, I cannot see. And let me tell you very honestly that is part of the inefficiency of the existing administration, because the same missing vision is exactly what we are suffering from in domestic issues. We are missing a vision domestically as well as internationally and regionally. Second point. Now, if we were to have a vision, definitely the question of Iran needs to be approached pragmatically. It's not acceptable to ideologize or to put it in an ideological terms. It's not about ideology, and it's not about undermining our relationship with the Gulf, because the UAE has always had diplomatic and trade relations with Iran more than anyone else in the region. So they should not come and tell us, you are not allowed to go to Iran, because they have been Dubai. Dubai is a creation to a great extent of Iranian money and of trade with Iran. So let's be honest and upfront. Egypt's relationships in the region or abroad should not be conditioned. But in order to have, in a conscious manner, a way of managing Egyptian foreign policy, we need a vision. Iran, we need conditionality with regard to human rights issues, with regard to the Syrian component, with regard to Iran in the Gulf, Iran and Iraq, and that needs to be pronounced and spelled out pragmatically. With regard to the GCC countries, we have, John, we have real issues on the ground. We have Egyptian guest workers in most of those countries, and that needs to be the number one priority. I do not understand what we talk about.
It's about 2 million, right?
Yes, over 2 million Egyptians are working in the GCC. So our priority needs to be to focus on their conditions, social and economic conditions, on their legal status, as every single country with guest workers abroad do. As every single country does when it has guest workers abroad. When it comes to trade relations and economic relations, yes, of course, the existing political class in Egypt, the new political class in Egypt, Islamist and otherwise, Islamist liberal, we have to understand that Gulf monarchies will continue to be fearful, and I'm putting it not in diplomatic terms, will continue to be fearful of the democratic experiment. I'm not saying they are undermining it, but of course they are fearful of the fact that we are electing a parliament, that we elected a president, regardless I like or dislike him, but we have an elected president. And that democratic experiment is not one of the positive sides which Gulf monarchies see when they look at Egypt. So that component needs to be tackled, and it needs to be deconstructed in our own interest by focusing on economic and trade issues, on issues related to Egyptian guest workers. But we should not accept conditionality on our foreign policy, be it with regard to Iran or anywhere else, as long as we have a vision. But what we lack is a real vision, and that is not a regional issue, and that is not due to the making of regional or external powers. It is our own fault, and I believe that is very much related to the inefficiency of the existing administration.
So let me follow up on that, because I think it bridges the first panel and the second panel. I mean, what you just said was that Egypt doesn't have much of a foreign policy because there aren't politics surrounding a foreign policy. What do you think would be required to create different schools of thought, different political orientations around politics, for people to use the political system to articulate and argue about what Egypt's priorities would be, with a hope that politics would produce a policy instead of the absence of a policy, which I think we've largely heard people describe. How do you make Egyptian politics produce a discussion that leads to a policy? Why don't we start with Dr.
Yeah. Before I answer this, I would like to respond to the notion that there is no vision for the Egyptian foreign policy. Maybe Amr is not aware of that vision, but there is a vision. And I wrote several articles. I just remembered. I went on TV with my friend here, Dina Al-Fattah, for two episodes, 1.5 hours each, talking only about our vision for the new foreign policy. And it triggered a lot of comments. You can ask her if you like. Actually, a lot of workshops were organized to discuss specifics about our vision, how we would like to see Egypt in 2 years, what are our objectives for the coming 2 years, what are the objectives of the Egyptian foreign policy, and what are the circles of interest to us. All this is there. And the president called for and he established a forum, and he called for different political parts. He called the Egyptian Council of Foreign Relations. He called professors of the Faculty of Political Sciences in Cairo. I called them many players, and that vision was discussed in detail, and that was broadcasted live on the air. I mean, how can we claim, and that there has been a lot of implementations. The president has been touring the world, and how can we say that there is no vision? I can accept that somebody criticizes that vision or says that this is wrong, or this, I don't agree with this, I don't agree with that. But to claim that there is no vision, this is totally unfair, because there is a vision, and we would love to have this discussed and criticized. And from this platform, I invite my friend Amr and all other political, I'm chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee in the party. I invite them, I will issue invitation to our political parties to discuss this. I have working papers. I'm going to present these, and we discuss this, and we welcome all the input so that we can reach an agreement. This is what helps. But if we keep accusing each other that we have nothing, this is not going to help, and this is not going to lead us anywhere.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the invitation. So I do believe, and I believe Amr and I will not disagree, and General Saif Eliezer will not disagree, that definitely foreign policy issues ought to be treated based on a bipartisan perspective. I mean, it's what decent countries do, and what decent politicians do as well. I mean, we may disagree on a wide range of issues in relation to domestic politics, but when it comes to foreign policy priorities, we've got to build and develop, articulate a platform, develop a vision based on bipartisanship. Honestly, I do not see a vision. I once again reiterate my statement. I see actions. I see movement around the globe, in the region and outside of the region, but it does not add up to a vision. Because a vision in foreign policy means that, number one, we have to define what Egyptian national interests are in the region and beyond. And if we have a definition of what Egyptian national interests are, I believe we would not be very assured seeing that the foreign debt of Egypt is being owned to 20% by one country that is dangerous for any country in the sense of dependency and building dependency. Secondly, if we were to define, if we would have had a clear definition of what Egyptian national interests in the region and beyond are, we would have clear statements and clear actions, be it with regard to preserving and protecting the rights of Egyptians in the Gulf and elsewhere, promoting trade relations in the Nile Basin and in the Mediterranean region, not only in the Gulf, reaching out to Libya and Tunisia economically. That was done to an extent, I have to say, but to have a wholesale understanding, a package of what constitutes Egyptian national interests and how to go about it. Secondly, and once again, it's a reflection of what we miss domestically. You reach bipartisanship on foreign policy issues if you have a decent process of democratic deliberations. It's how this country goes about bipartisanship in foreign policy issues, and it's how any democratic country goes about bipartisanship in relation to national security-related issues or foreign policy issues. But because we lack democratic deliberations in Egypt, because we lack consensus on domestic as well as foreign issues, we do not have it. We do not have that bipartisanship. The way to go about it would be to definitely create bodies until we have an elected parliament, until we have completed our legislative branch of government, it would be to have bodies for scholars, for politicians, for party members to sit down and discuss. Amr Darragh mentioned the council which was established by the president. And as far as I know, and I speak about myself and fellow politicians in different opposition parties, none of us was invited. So if you are not treating foreign policy issues in a bipartisan-driven manner, what are you expecting the opposition to do? Of course, it will continue to cry out, no vision is there, and there is no vision there. The council was established. We were not invited. It's turning into a body managed one-sidedly. Final remark, and let me be very upfront about that. Now, Egyptians need clarity and transparency with regard to who is managing foreign policy. It's no longer acceptable that I see duality between the presidency and the foreign ministry. And I do not know who is managing. Is it the Minister of Foreign Affairs? Is it the foreign minister? Or is it the president's assistant, the assistant to the president, who is managing foreign affairs? And let me, once again, very frankly tell you that Egyptian diplomats, I'm not quoting anyone here in the embassy, not to undermine their term. I'm quoting diplomats from elsewhere. They are receiving orders. They are receiving requests not addressed to them from the ministry. but from informal institutions which should not be part of the Egyptian foreign policy making, and that needs to be clarified. If you would like to have bipartisanship, so clarify who is running Egyptian foreign policy institutionally and invite us in, and we will not say no. It's about our country and our national interests.
Well, I succeed Amr Hamzawi that I don't see a really political vision now in Egypt. In fact, sometimes we have a policy which we see regarding an important regional issue like Syria, for instance, and then we found ourselves in front of our president saying in Russia a different, actually an opposite idea. We are succeeding very much in Egypt, the revolution in Syria. We are saying that the revolutionaries are doing well. We are against Bashar al-Assad, we're against his regime. His regime has to step down. And suddenly, that's a vision. What I call this is, okay, this is the policy of Egypt, that we are supporting the revolutionaries in Syria. We are supporting the Syrian Free Army. And then we found ourselves in front of an announcement and a speech by our president in Russia saying that we appreciate the Russian view and point regarding Syria, and we are in agreement with that. That makes you 100 degree opposite on the other side. Are we with the Russia with the Russian view? Ali. لا قال كده. لا لا لا. لا لا. I think many. وهو موافق عليه. قال إيه؟ قال إيه؟ Okay. قال إيه نجيب؟ قال إيه نجيب؟ قال إيه بالضبط؟ بس كده. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Nagib is saying that the statement was that president said that that he listened to the Russian view regarding Syria and we understand where they are coming from. They are coming from supporting Bashar al-Assad. He's not coming against. Okay. But the Russian, you want to tell me, okay. You want to tell me that the Russian against Bashar al-Assad. If you're saying that, okay, I agree with that. But anyway, that's not the only one. We see different other actually occasions that it was very contradictory with other policies. I mean, you go right or you go left. This is not clear. Plus, in fact, there's other gray areas in some political foreign issues, and regarding, for instance, what Mr. Amr Hamza, Amr Drag said regarding Mali. What I mean regarding that we said France, the French people, they are not allowed to go to intervene to make intervention in Mali and shoot these groups. These groups are Qaeda. We have to stop talking about it. Don't say anything. Leave it. If you don't want to be involved, just say, yes, I am listening and I'm watching the issue. But don't say that I am against that. You are against that? All right, you know what happens? They stopped the visit for President Morsi to France. They said, okay, we'll delay it, number one. Number two, the euro money, again, it was stopped. So we are harming ourselves by that. We have to have a clear vision, political clear vision. It's not there.
Thank you. The comment that we understand where they're coming from reminds me of a colleague I used to work with in the State Department. It wasn't until I had worked with her for about 6 months that I realized when she said, I take your point, what she meant was, you're wrong. And it always sounded so nice. I take your point. Like, wow, I've really persuaded her. No, she meant you're wrong. Anyway, I finally learned. It only took 6 months. One question that I think is on people's minds is what is the proper relationship of what is happening in Egypt to what's happening in the rest of the region? Should Egypt consider itself to have a leadership role? Should it be an example? Should it inspire people? Should there be partnerships between Egypt and other groups or governments to try to have people learn from the Egyptian experience? Or should Egypt be considering its bilateral relationships, working with existing governments, governments that have not transitioned, governments that may be persecuting Islamist parties? How does the new Egypt relate to a region which is not entirely new?
Okay. Well, inspiring is never a program. And inspiring is never a set of well-defined policies to inspire regionally. I believe Egypt, in different periods in its long history, inspired the region and inspired humanity beyond the region, and that was based on showing and documenting and signaling to the world the fact that we are a strong nation, knowing where we are going, regardless of how we evaluate past experiences in today's terms. Egypt was inspiring in the 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s, projecting an image of a new nation state, a modern nation state, well able to define a clear place for religion and its politics, well able to safeguard personal freedoms and to provide for modernization. Egypt was inspiring in the 1950s and 60s for different reasons. And Egypt will continue to inspire as long as we have progress in our country, which the region looks at and understands and affiliates or associates with. Having said that, let me say very briefly that I do believe that Egypt, regardless of the differences we have in our domestic politics between the Brotherhood and Liberal Party,